5. May 27th. I am writing in the morning, having eaten my breakfast. I am sitting at the entrance to the cave with my binoculars, watching the house and the tent for a sign of life. So far, there has been none, except that the dog went to the tent again, wagged his tail again, and sat down expectantly for a minute or two. When nothing happened, he ran around the house, up the hill, and came to see me. Poor Pharaoh. He was hungry, and now that he is home, he expects to be fed. There's plenty of dog food in the store, but of course I have none up here. So I gave him a piece of cornbread and some canned hash. I could be gladder to see him this time, since for the moment at least I was not worried about the man. I patted him quite a bit and talked to him. After he had eaten, he lay down beside me at the entrance and rested his head on my foot. That seemed quite touching, because it is what he used to do with David, never with anyone else. Still, after only a few minutes, he got up and ran back down the hill. He emerged at the house, where he sat down near the entrance to the tent. Although he likes me, he seems to be adopting the man. But the man himself has not moved. I know he is sick, but I do not know how sick, and therefore I do not know what to do. It may be that he just doesn't feel very well and has decided to stay in bed. Or he may be so sick he can't get up. He may even be dying. Last night, I would not have thought it would worry me so much, but this morning it does. It began with a dream I had just before I got up. It was one of those dreams that are more like daydreams. I have them when I am half awake and half asleep. I am somewhat aware that I am dreaming, and in a sense am making the dream up, but being half asleep, it still seems true. I dreamed, or daydreamed, that it was my father in the tent, sick, and then that my whole family were there again, in the house. I felt so joyful it took my breath away, and I woke up. I lay there realizing that it was not true, but also realizing something else. I thought I had become used to being alone, and to the idea that I would always be alone. But I was wrong. Now that somebody is here, the thought of going back, the thought of the house and the valley being empty again, this time forever, I am sure of that, seems so terrible I cannot bear it. So, even though the man is a stranger, and I'm afraid of him, I am worrying about his being sick, and the idea that he might die makes me feel quite desperate. I am writing this partly to get it clear in my head and to help me make up my mind. I think what I will do is wait and watch until late afternoon. Then, if he still has not come out of the tent, I will go down while it is still light, very quietly, and see if I can see, without getting too close, how he is. I will take my gun with me. May 28th. I am back in the house in my own room. The man is in the tent. He is asleep, most of the time at least, and so sick he cannot get up. He scarcely knows I am here. Yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock, as I had decided, I took my gun and went down the hill to the house. I came up behind it and walked, slowly and quietly, listening, around to the front. If I heard any activity, I was going to duck back and try to get away again without being seen. When I reached the front yard, the dog came rushing up to meet me. I was afraid he was going to bark, but he did not. He just sniffed at my knee, wagged his tail, and watched. I crept to the tent and looked in. It has a flap to close it, but that was hanging loose, partly open. Still, it was dark inside. I could see only his legs at first. I crept closer, put my head inside, and my eyes adjusted to the dark. He lay on a sleeping bag, partly covered, his eyes closed, his head in a mess where he had been sick. He was breathing quite fast and shallow. Beside him lay a water bottle, a green plastic thing, knocked over and spilled. Beside that lay a jar of pills, large white ones with the top off, also knocked over and partly spilled out. The tent roof was only about 4 feet high. I kneeled down and went in just a little way so I could reach his hand where it lay on top of the bag. The smell was terrible. I touched his hand. It was dry and hot with fever. Just as I touched it, Pharaoh, his nose in the entrance, whined, and at the combination of the noise and the touch, he opened his eyes. "Edward," he said. "Edward." He was not looking at me, or if he was, he was not seeing me. but I think he was looking at my gun, which I was still holding, because the next thing he said was, "Bullets. It won't stop." He did not finish the sentence, but sighed and closed his eyes again. He was dreaming. He was delirious, and his voice sounded thick, as if his throat and mouth were swollen. "You're sick," I said. "You have a fever." He moaned and spoke without opening his eyes again. "Water. Please give me water." I could see what had happened. Before he collapsed, he had opened a bottle of water and some pills. In his confusion, he had knocked them over. The bottle was empty, and he was too weak to get more. "All right," I said. "I'll get you some water. It will take a few minutes." I got a pail from the kitchen and ran to the stream where it flowed into the pond. The water is clearest there. When I got back, I was hot and out of breath. I had filled the pail nearly full, and it was heavy. I got a cup from the house and dipped it half full. He was asleep again, so I touched his shoulder. "Here," I said, "drink this." He tried to rise, but could not even on his elbow, and when he tried to take the cup, he dropped it. I half filled it again from the pail. This time I held it and lifted his head a little with my other hand. He gulped it down. He was really thirsty. "More," he said. "Not now," I said. "It will make you sick again." I do not know much about medicine, but I know that much. He fell back and went to sleep again instantly. The truth is, I do not know enough to take care of him. I helped my mother sometimes, taking care of David or Joseph when they got sick. Grip, chicken pox, things like that. But never anyone this sick. Still, there is no one else, so I have to try. I got a rag from the house, and using some of the water, I cleaned up as well as I could around his head. I got him a fresh pillow and a clean blanket. I put the pills, those that were still clean, back in the bottle, capped it, and looked at the label. Cysteamine, whatever that is. The only medicine I have in the house and the store is aspirin and some cold tablets. But I wouldn't know what medicine to give him anyway if I had more. I thought that since drinking the water had not made him sick again, perhaps he should eat something. But what? I decided on soup. Chicken soup. That is what my mother usually gave us when we were sick. I had left some canned food in the house. It would have looked odd not to. When I moved to the cave, but there was no soup, so I had to walk to the store. I got some other stuff while I was there. I had already decided to move back to the house, but to leave the cave stocked for the time being, just in case. So I had quite a load to carry, and by the time I got back and got a fire going, it was nearly dark. When I took the soup into him, I found, to my surprise, that he seemed somewhat improved. He was awake, and when I entered, he stared, quite bewildered, and with some effort managed to raise himself on one elbow. Then he spoke to me consciously for the first time. His voice was still very weak. "I don't know where I am," he said. "Who are you?" "You're in the valley," I said. "You've been sick." I put the soup down beside him. I had thought I would have to feed it to him. "The valley," he said. "I remember now. All the green trees. But there was no one there." He lay back on the pillow again. "I was here," I said. "I stayed in the woods." I thought it better not to mention the cave. "Then I saw you were sick, and I thought you needed help." "Sick," he said. "Yes, very sick." "I made you some soup," I said. "Try to eat it." He did try, but his hand was so weak he spilled it. So in the end I did feed it to him. He ate 7 spoonfuls and then said, "No more, too sick." He fell asleep again. However, I think even that bit of soup did him some good. He seemed to sleep more naturally and was not breathing so fast. I had brought a thermometer from the house to take his temperature, but I decided that could wait until morning. I touched his forehead. It was hot, all right. From close up, in the dimness of the tent, he looked extremely frail. I went back up to the cave, got my alarm clock and calendar, a lamp, this notebook, and some other things, and came back to the house. I set the alarm for midnight. When it went off, I reset it for 2 o'clock, then for 4 o'clock. Each time it rang, I went out with a flashlight and looked in the tent to see how he was. Once he woke and asked again for water. I gave him a cupful. The rest of the time he slept steadily. This morning, I crumbled some of the remaining cornbread in some milk and took it to him for breakfast. I had to use powdered milk because the cows are still out. I will have to catch them now and bring them back in, also the chickens. This time, he seemed very much better. His eyes have lost the dazed look they had earlier. He thanked me for the bread and milk and was able to spoon it out himself. After he finished eating it, he actually sat up for a moment. Then he lay back again and said, "I need to find out what made me sick." "I think it is because you swam in Burden Creek," I said.
"Burden Creek?"
"The stream across the road."
"You know about that?"
"I was watching from a distance away."
"You know about the water?"
"Nothing lives in it. I don't know just why.
I discovered that, but not until the day after I took a bath in it. So stupid to be careless after all this time. I had not been in water for a year. I was too eager. Still, I should have tested. But that other water in the pond was all right, so I thought..."
He stopped and lay quietly for a time. Then he said,
"I might as well know. Could you..."
"Could I what?"
"Do you know what a Geiger counter is?"
"Those glass tubes you have."
"Yes. Can you read one?"
"No. That is, I never have." I got the smaller of the tubes out of his wagon trunk, and he showed me a gauge on one end of it, a small needle that wavered a bit when you moved it, like a compass. The dial was numbered from 0 to 200. I took it across the road to Burden Creek. In the tent and crossing the road, the needle stayed at about 5, but when I got near the water, it began to go up. Standing back as far as I could, I held it a foot above the stream. The needle shot over, up to about 180, almost as high as it could go, and he had been in the water. No wonder he got sick. I did not stay there, but got back across the road. When I told him what the needle showed, he groaned and covered his eyes with his hand.
180, he said, and I was in the water at least 10 minutes. My God, I must have got 300 R's, maybe more.
What does that mean? I asked.
It means I have radiation poisoning. Very bad.
But you're getting better.
It comes in stages.
He knew a great deal about radiation sickness. Apparently, he had studied it even before the war. The first part, getting sick to your stomach, lasts only a day or so, then goes away. However, the radiation causes what he called intracellular ionization, and that is the real damage. It means that some of the molecules in his cells are destroyed so that the cells no longer work normally and cannot grow and divide. In a short time, a day or two, maybe longer, he is going to get much sicker. He will get a very high fever, and since his blood cells were damaged and cannot reproduce, he will also get anemic. Worst of all, he will have no resistance to germs and infection. He will be very susceptible to pneumonia or even the mildest impurities in his food and water.
How bad will it get? I asked. What I meant but did not want to say was, are you likely to die? He understood.
Do you know what an R means? It's a Rontgen, a way of measuring radiation. If I absorbed 300 R's in that stream, I may live through it. If I got 400 or 500, well, then it's hopeless. He said all this in a very matter-of-fact way. He was calm about it. I think I would have been hysterical. However, I tried to stay calm, too, and be practical. So I said, while you are feeling better, you should tell me all you can about what I should do. Do you have medicine to take? What should you eat? He looked at the jar of pills, still on the floor where I had put it.
Those won't help, not now. No, there's no medicine. In a hospital, they give transfusions and intravenous nutrients.
I can't do that, of course. So what it amounts to is that there won't be much I can do, not until I see how the sickness develops. The only thing he seems sure of at this point is that he will have a very high fever and anemia. It is likely, but not certain, that he will develop some kind of infection like pneumonia or dysentery. One thing I can do will be to try to prevent that. I can boil and sterilize everything he eats and eats from, just as you do for a baby. When I get the cows and chickens back in, I can give him fresh milk and eggs to eat,
They are nourishing and easy to digest. And if he is strong enough to walk a little tomorrow, I will try to help him into the house. He can sleep in Joseph and David's room on a bed. It will be drier and warmer in the house, and easier for me to take care of him. I just realized that after all this, I still do not even know his name.